Greetings, welcome, bienvenidos, hola, aloha, ni hao, namaste, konnichiwa, bonjour, buongiorno, sawadee karup, guten tag, ciao, wee viva, cat bang, half a day, jai janendra, salam, shalom, peace, now, go vegan, peace how, go vegan. From the left coast of the genetically mutated McNugget pharmaceutical vivisection prison kilitary industrial corporation in the cheese-covered bankster bankrupt post-constitutional corruptocracy-mocracy criminocracy of the United States of Listeria, foodborne in the NRA, NSA, USA, home of Uncle Salmonella, where they sure do eat a lot of dead animal body parts, and the Wall Street-backed corporate diet of death, disease, and destruction is shoved down your throat. This is Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. Yes, I use that V word. I said vegan. We had quite the reaction to last week's program. A lot of people accusing me of being unfair in the debate with Wayne Shun of Direct Action Everywhere and Professor Gary Francione. I never said it was a debate. It was a discussion. Wayne was supposed to answer the criticisms that Professor Francione and I have for this group of anti-vegan vegans who promote veganism by not mentioning it, by dismissing it. They say veganism is not enough. Well, actually, veganism is enough to stop climate change. We'll look more at Direct Action Everywhere later in the program with a former organizer of Direct Action Everywhere and Collectively Free, Annie Hudson. She's on today's program. It's so important that we get the world to go vegan. Because it is the only solution to climate change. I mean, everybody out there protesting with Direct Action Everywhere. If you don't want, you know, if you're at a vigil and you don't want your candle to be doused, you know, by being submerged in glacial waters, we better get with the program and get everybody to go vegan. Then, you know, have at it once we've addressed the problem. But, you know, atmospheric carbon dioxide levels have just hit, 402 parts per million. And that is the highest it's been in how long? 800,000 years. That's what some scientists say. Some other scientists say maybe it hasn't hit that level for 15 million years. So, April is the first month in recorded history where CO2 levels reached 400 parts per million every day. Veganism isn't enough. It's the only solution to climate change. If we want to live to not talk about veganism, we better get everybody to go vegan. And I'm not saying it's the only solution. I'm not the one. It's the top climate specialists from the World Bank who tell us that we need a 50 to 85% shift from so-called livestock products to vegan. And it has to happen soon. Has to happen by 2020. But, you know, veganism isn't enough. Everybody really just gives lip service to climate change. Those who should know better should be, you know, moving their lips in the right direction, having people go vegan to address climate change and therefore drought and water shortage. But people just give lip service to climate change, ignoring the fact that what passes through our lips is the main cause of climate change. Obama tomorrow, will blame coal in his new environmental plan. That'll be announced tomorrow. He'll announce it, I think, not Josh Earnest. Isn't that, you know, like a name right out of Central Casting to be, you know, a spokesperson for an administration. Josh Earnest. I don't snicker. I don't laugh. I can say things with a straight face. So it's kind of scary when you know, the Obama administration talks about actions for climate change. You know, and makes me worry that we'll be supporting nuclear energy as a green solution, as was proposed in the past, right? Glad he wasn't supporting nuclear. That would be dangerous. So, oh, they're the same thing. Sorry. Look how many people still say nuclear in the media out of deference to King George W. Well, Greenpeace thinks that having activists hanging from bridges in Portland to block Shell's ships, for a few hours on their way to the Arctic to try to stop drilling for oil there, Greenpeace thinks that's the solution to climate change. It looks dramatic. You know, all those people hanging from the bridge probably will generate a lot of donations to Greenpeace, which is really what's all that matters. Greenpeace, one of those organizations under suspicion for being under the influence of rancher and meat industry money. As we know for sure, the Sierra Club and 350.org are certainly totally guilty of that. We get nothing but fibbing from fibbing Bill McKibben, the meat eater. So hang off a bridge for a few hours, take some pictures, declare victory, and count your money. All those activists hanging off the bridges in Portland this past week, the Pacific Northwest is experiencing an unprecedented heat wave. Our whole climate is unprecedented right now. When I was the program director of a radio station called The Sound in Seattle, I lived on Lake Washington and later West Seattle, and I remember it being a really cool city in more ways than one. I don't really remember it being that hot and dry. Well, no one remembers it being as hot and dry as it is now, this year. On Friday, Seattle hit the 90-degree mark for the 11th time this summer. That has never happened until now. And it seems that July will go down as Seattle's hottest month ever. 100% of Washington and Oregon are now in drought, as we are in California. The Pacific Northwest has experienced a fraction of normal snowpack because of warmer winters. And under the headline, heat, drought, cook fish alive in Pacific Northwest, an article in USA Today says 1.5 million juvenile fish at hatcheries have died as a result of the drought. Hundreds of thousands of sockeye salmon in the Columbia River have perished due to warm water. Warm water is a big problem. No water is a pretty big problem, too. The headline in the Washington Post reads, "New NASA data show how the world is running out of water." So, have I blamed all of this yet on animal agriculture today? Have I reminded you, as I often do on this program, since it seems to be the only show in all media, mentioning that animal agriculture is the number one cause of climate change, responsible for at least 51% of all greenhouse gas emissions. There are lots of emissions up there as we hit record levels not seen in 800,000 to 15 million years. Is that enough to get you to go vegan? Okay. So animal agriculture, the number one cause of drought, the number one cause of climate change, the number one cause of water depletion. Just thought I'd throw all that in right now in case you're someone who still eats meat, so-called meat, dairy, fish, and eggs. if you are not vegan yet, hey, take a selfie, huh? So that the 8 human beings left on the planet in a few years know whom to blame. Not that we're blaming you, you know? I mean, it's just maybe you could... Don't think of it as blame. Think of it as an opportunity to take responsibility for your actions. Yeah, I can hear you now. Yeah, I hear you saying, yeah, I hear you. I'm against climate change, and I'll do anything to stop it. Yeah, I want to do my share to help with the drought, but what? Give up my meat? Well, now you're asking for a little too much, huh? Stop eating ice cream, you know, stop eating cheese, stop eating dairy, stop eating eggs and fish. Oh, now you're asking too much. Come on, man. I'm not watering my lawn as much as I used to, huh? So, isn't it ironic? Ice cream is the ironic food of climate change, huh? Oh, it's so hot out. Oh, we got to eat more ice cream. And, of course, that's what's causing climate change. You know, methane from cows, a big responsibility there as things heat up. More ice cream, please, huh? Ice cream. You scream, we all scream for ice cream, you know. The cow screams for her baby, who can't have the milk you want frozen, you know, for your ice cream. The family screams after the news from the oncologist. We all scream when our planet becomes uninhabitable. Levels reaching what they haven't reached in 800,000 to 15 million years. But not a peep about this from the environmental groups. You know, they're dangling from a thread in a heat wave. Not a peep from the pseudo-animal rights groups either, who are all cheering that Ben & Jerry's is introducing vegan flavors soon. Yay, Ben & Jerry's. Really, when vegan ice cream is so delicious, vegan ice cream is so delicious, by the way, readily available everywhere, made from soy or rice or almonds or coconut. But people want, you know, the frozen sweetened cow nipple drippings pushed on us starting at an early age. I guess it's time for a break. We'll continue. As I mentioned, we have Annie Hudson coming up in the program, as well as Professor Gary Francione on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at goveganradio.com. Register now for the World Vegan Summit and Expo. We've extended early bird ticket prices. I'll tell you about that after the break. Continue on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at goveganradio.com, on Twitter at Go Vegan Radio, Facebook Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, and there are two other extraneous Bob Linden pages, usually maxed out at about 5,000 each, until I found out, oh, you're supposed to have a fan page. You're supposed to be egomaniacal and have a fan page. So anyway, so then we started Go Vegan Radio, the Go Vegan Radio Facebook page after that. Well, environmental groups won't tell you, and animal activists are saying veganism isn't enough, but it is the only thing that can save us from climate change. We may need a massive population shift to veganism. It's the only thing that can save us from climate change, the only way to address water shortage and drought. And at the World Vegan Summit and Expo next July, July 29th, 30th, and 31st, 2016, at the University of California, Berkeley, we will have a water and drought crisis forum, and we will have a climate crisis forum, And good news for procrastinating early birds. We're extending the time period for early bird discount tickets, and that'll be through August 10th. So adult tickets remain at $77 for all 3 days of the event for the registration. Early bird discounts for college students remain at $67. But then on August 11th, it'll be $99 for adults and $77 for college students. And so we certainly hope that you will attend as we attempt to create a vegan movement. There's never been a vegan movement, and the world and the animals certainly need one right now. We have, what is it, half of all water usage, half of all water pollution related to animal agriculture. And also, now we hear that CO2 levels are the highest in the atmosphere. Oh, the highest in 800,000 to 15 million years. Also, we have problems with the aquifers of the world being depleted. That's a serious problem. You know, it's really hot. We have heat waves. And we get thirsty, huh? Well, sorry, no water. As reported in the Washington Post, new NASA data show how the world is running out of water, and we're told that more than half of Earth's 37 largest aquifers are being depleted. 21 of them have passed their sustainability tipping points, and these are everywhere from the U.S. to India to China to France. And these are freshwater sources for hundreds of millions of people. We're in crisis because people continue to eat animals and their secretions. People continue to have meat, dairy, fish, and eggs. And California's Central Valley Aquifer is the most troubled in the U.S. We talked about this a few weeks back on a recent show on how the land in Central California is actually collapsing where the water has been removed, usually for animal agriculture, for growing feed for animals or for the animals themselves. The world's most stressed aquifer, defined as suffering rapid depletion with little or no signs of recharging, was the Arabian aquifer, a water source used by more than 60 million people. That was followed by the Indus Basin in India and Pakistan, and then the Merzouk, the Jato Basin in Libya and Niger. As I said, California's Central Valley Aquifer is the most troubled in the United States at this point. Also running a negative balance was the Atlantic and Gulf Coastal Plains Aquifer, which stretches across the southeast coast and Florida. And then there are three other aquifers in the middle of the country who are in better shape than California, but that's not saying much, okay? All right, we'll continue. We'll continue our discussion of Direct Action Everywhere with Annie Hudson coming up and Professor Gary Francione on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at goveganradio.com. Continue on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at goveganradio.com, on Twitter at Go Vegan Radio, Facebook Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, and the Bob Linden page is there. Well, last week we had the founder of Direct Action Everywhere on the program, Wayne Shum, and I must say that the more I know about Direct Action Everywhere, the less I understand. It seems to be a group of anti-vegan vegans who promote veganism by not mentioning it or by dismissing it. I posted Wayne's 14-page essay, Boycott Veganism, all over Facebook this past week, and frankly, I don't really understand it. The group seems to dismiss veganism as some sort of mere consumerist movement. The group is protesting at Whole Foods and Chipotle, where we find consumers. Anyway, As I said, the more I know, the less I understand. So why not talk to a former organizer of Direct Action Everywhere, and then I won't understand a thing about it, probably, the more clear it becomes. Annie Hudson, right now, is social media director for Evolve for Animals, a New York City area group engaged in vegan education. But prior to that, she was an organizer for Direct Action Everywhere and Collectively Free in New York City. So welcome, Annie. How are you today?
Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for being with us. So an interesting part of your background, Annie. I suppose if people saw you in your childhood, they'd think you might be one of the people least likely. Actually, maybe you would be someone most likely to be promoting veganism. But what were you doing back in your childhood in Texas?
So back in the good old town of Bastrop, Texas, a very small rural farm town, I was part of an organization called 4-H. And this organization mostly teaches young children how to teaches them about agriculture. And most of that is animal agriculture. So it teaches you how to farm and care for an animal, how to feed them, how to raise them. And then at the end of it, you show them, and it's usually about 6 months or so, and you take them to the livestock show, you show them, a judge rates you, and then you auction them off, and they go to slaughter, and then you start again the next year. So I did that with what we called poultry, which we know is chickens, and I also did some turkeys and ducks and other sorts of fowl. And part of that was showing show birds, and then part of that was actually broilers, which are typically used for meat, and it ended in us slaughtering them. It ended up in the, you know, killing of these animals and eating them. And, you know, it's pretty awful because these animals have names, and then we teach young kids to just don't get too attached to the animal, because then you have to give them up and slaughter them, and they have to sustain you, and that's just the evil way the world is. And so that's what I accepted at a very young age.
Mm. But you were saddened by it all at that time, or you just...
Yeah, absolutely. I remember pleading with my mother in the car, like, you know, please, let's not do this. Like, let's just let these chickens live their lives. They're only, I think they were 6 weeks old at the time when she told me, and no, they're raised for meat. This is what they're used for. And so I grew up with the mentality that it is an animal's job to be here for us. Not wild animals so much, but, you know, chickens, cows, pigs, the animals that we exploit through our food, that those animals are here for us. And to be honest, our animals had amazing lives. They were treated really well. And, you know, I just spent a week in Texas, and I'm going through this whole, there's not factory farms in Texas. I didn't even know what a factory farm was until I was in college. But there are lots of farmed animals. You can find them everywhere, but they're not hidden. They actually have pretty good lives. They're roaming around. They have sunshine. They can dust bathe. A lot of them, like I said, they even have names. But at the end of the day, you know, they're still being exploited and they're still being killed. So that's my problem, number one, to bring it back to why I'm here. That's my problem with this, like, you know, going after Chipotle and Whole Foods and, you know, now even Starbucks, is because it's, we're talking about treatment of animals by a company. And so people are going to go to, oh, well, gee, that doesn't sound really good at all. So, okay, maybe I have to move on to greener pastures, if you will, and start, you know, participating in backyard hens and more actually free range and grass fed beef and so on and so forth. Because it does exist. There are people out there who treat their animals really well. except for when they're like sticking a knife to their throat, of course.
So, and how did you awaken to all of this? I mean, how did you yourself become vegan and become interested in on this path?
I became vegan sort of in a really roundabout way. I was, the day I moved to New York City 6 years ago, I became what I called a pescatarian, which is just a really confused vegetarian, right? And who was a really confused person anyway. And I only consumed seafood because I didn't know about sentience of fish, and I didn't know what a huge problem it was to our environment. I didn't know what bycatch was, so I was really uneducated, but I had the right intentions. I didn't want someone to die for my meal. And so then I, you know, slowly just, I had no intentions of becoming a vegan because vegans were off the rockers. That was just like this really high up their thing. And groups like PETA and the Humane Society, I mean, the Humane Society of the United States is probably the reason that I didn't go vegan for 4 years, because I was...
That you didn't go vegan? You said because you did not.
Exactly.
Okay.
I did not go vegan because of groups like the Humane Society, and specifically. I was donating money to them, and they were sending me emails about, boycott. I think it was IHOP at the time, because they wouldn't sell cage-free eggs or something. I was like, oh, gosh. And then we're congratulating Dunkin' Donuts because they are starting to phase in cage-free eggs, and then I'm feeling really good about it. And so, you know, it was just really confusing. And I was sitting there at the market, and I'm looking at the eggs, and I'm looking at cage-free, free-range, and organic eggs. And I had no idea, Bob, what the heck I was looking at. And I was like, I have no idea what any of this means. I come from Texas where I raised chickens and they had a really good life. So that's what I'm thinking. But I don't know what the difference is, and I want to do the best I can. So I went home and I looked up what these terms meant by the USDA regulations. And I was mortified. And I remember calling my mom so upset because I had been lied to, because I had this different idea in my head. And so it was sort of like, I think I can't eat eggs anymore, but I'm not really sure. Maybe there's a better way. Maybe backyard eggs. Like, I'm not really sure, but this just seems preposterous. And then it was just by mistake that certain things started getting connected together. Veggicated popped up in my Netflix queue, right? And so I watched that, and, you know, so I started researching more. And then eventually I became to veganism. But it wasn't until I was working at Evolve for Animals table at the Seed Expo last year that I really understood what veganism was, that it's not about the treatment of animals. This isn't just about factory farming and animal abuse. It is about the use of animals. And Evolve for Animals was the first organization I came across. And, you know, I'm thankful to this day that the founder, Neil Stagel, asked me to table it. That was the first time I heard it articulated so beautifully. I still didn't even understand, you know, that riding horses wasn't a great thing, that we just should not be using animals at all. And so that was, you know, how I came around to it.
Mm-hmm. So, and then how did you get involved with Direct Action Everywhere and Collectively Free?
So, it was kind of by mistake, or just by chance, I should say. I was very... You know, I was sort of a new vegan. I didn't really know about the history of animal rights and movement. And, you know, I think it's when people can't articulate themselves well, they tend to get frustrated, right? Because we want people to go vegan. Like, it was very clear, I want people to go vegan, and I want to speak on behalf of animals. So I was sort of just like, anything for the animals. And I just want to say one thing. The reason I'm here today talking about this, it's not because I'm trying to stir up controversy. It's not because I'm trying to divide the movement, because I see these things written in social media so much that we're just trying that, you know, oh, the industry wants us to be divided. But I don't think that's true at all. I think that we are supposed to think critically about what it is that we're doing, right? So that we can evolve, that we can do better. And the reason I came to DXB and Collectively Free was pretty much just because that was what was laid on the table for me. And the people in these organizations are amazing people with lots of passion, and I have no doubt in my mind that they want abolition, that they are abolitionists, that they want liberation, but the messages just don't come across. But as a young activist and a young vegan, it sounded really good to me. I heard Wayne Chong's speech, and it just, you know, it moved me, and it inspired me to move. But I got to say, when I first started doing these actions, like, you know, I actually really didn't like them. But as I said, I'm just anything for the animals, you know. I felt really nervous as I went through the entire day, and I just pushed through it like I would any other performance. And after a while, it begins to be more and more empowering, right? And then people started complimenting me on, you know, my vegan community was complimenting me on how brave I was, how eloquently I spoke, and started calling me a hero for the animals. And I was even getting compliments on how pretty I looked on camera. So that started to draw me in more and more. And I was like, okay, maybe this is actually pretty good. Maybe it's not so bad. And what I've come to realize now is that I was high on heroism, and that this, you know, this whole DXC, like running into stores and yelling at people, it's like sexy. It's really sexy activism is what I say. And so the videos are being passed around and everything. So it makes sense that it's like drawing more people in. And, you know, after a while, I started to, just, you know, reexamine what was happening. But it took me a while to get there. I was like really on board with everything. And I started looking at all the videos that were being passed around all over the world. And I saw passersby being defensive and isolated. I saw opportunities for conversation being turned down in order to stick to a script. I noticed people in the organization publicly making fun of education, abolitionists, and non-vegans. And then I realized that vegans started to be this new dirty five-letter word that we weren't allowed to talk about. So,
Annie, hold on. We need to take a break. And
sure.
We'll also be joined by Professor Gary Francione coming up on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at goveganradio.com. Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at goveganradio.com, on Twitter at goveganradio, Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden on Facebook. And we're continuing our discussion with Annie Hudson, social media director for Evolve for Animals, New York City area group engaged in vegan education. She is formerly an organizer for Direct Action Everywhere and Collectively Free in New York City. And I think this is an interesting case study. Maybe I'll invite Professor Gary Francione to say hi, and we'll continue our discussion with Annie and see, you know, her progression here. I think you may have been you heard her opening discussion here with us, Professor Francione.
I did. Hi, Annie. It's nice to meet you.
Hi, Gary. Nice to meet you.
I did hear it, and I was very interested, and I want to hear more.
Yes,
I have some questions and some comments afterwards, but I'd like to. She's telling an interesting story. I want to hear it.
Yeah, really. We'll just keep going through it because you became very active in the disruptions or demonstrations, I guess, mm-hmm. and the adrenaline was flowing. And then before the break, you said, and we'll probably have a break coming up soon again. But you said vegan was becoming a four-letter, five-letter word to people in these demonstrations.
It didn't start off that way, but I realized that over time it was starting to be something that we weren't saying anymore. And so, you know, that was okay. Maybe that's not a big deal, you know. And then I saw this hatred for Whole Foods that we were putting out, and, you know, I was like, what is the message that the public is taking away? So when I started to reflect, as more and more pictures and videos of me being passed around doing this type of activism, I noticed that my non-vegan friends started to dwindle away. I saw all the attention that we were receiving on social media was actually from other people in the organization itself, and you know, so I was like, okay, is this some sort of echo chamber? This is starting to feel like we're preaching to the choir. Who is actually receiving our message? And then someone wrote an article. They wrote it in a positive light, but I took it differently. They were likening our tactics to those of PETA. And the reason I one of the reasons I got involved with this type of activism is because I really thought it was like cutting edge and people hadn't done it before. And, you know, a few people said, you know, PETA does this type of stuff. And I'm like, okay, so this is one organization that I actually didn't really want to have anything to do with. And here we are doing pretty similar forms of activism that they are. And during my last few actions that I actually did, the disruptions and the interventions, I got this feeling, the same feeling I got in the very beginning in my stomach. And I just, you know, I really had to start looking at that. And then I found myself having to explain our actions and our message to other vegans over and over again. Everywhere I went, everywhere when I was meeting new activists and new vegans, and I'd go to these show, these expos and type things, can you explain to me, so what's the deal with Whole Foods? And I'm not quite sure. And I was like, oh, you're just misunderstanding us. You're not looking at it from this angle. But then I realized these weren't non-vegans. These were vegans. These are people who already understand animal ethics. They're on the same side as me, and they can't even comprehend what we're trying to say. So how can I expect the average non-vegan to understand it?
Well, what is Whole Foods supposed to do? What is Whole Foods supposed to do?
So that's a good question, and because it's, you know, obviously they're not going to stop selling animal products until the demand goes down or, you know, diminishes for animal products, because they are a business in it for the money, and as long as people are buying it, they're going to sell it, you know. So, or
I wasn't sure if they're supposed to stop selling humane meat, so-called humane meat. I don't know.
Okay. And so that was something that I wasn't actually quite sure of either. And I think, you know, I began to hear a lot more criticisms of, like, the tactics and the messages of the campaigns. And I'm talking to seasoned activists. I researched, I actually started researching the difference between welfare and abolition. And I was like, gee, I think that maybe we are a new welfarist group. I know that we want abolition. We're all abolitionists. We're all vegans. No question. But is that what the public is taking away from this? Is that the message that we're presenting to people? And what I learned is, when you step inside of a restaurant holding a sign and props and yelling about mistreatment of animals, you may think that you're putting the attention on the victim of the oppressive system, but since that victim is not in the room with you, you have actually put the attention on yourself. And now that you have their attention, what did you do with it? Are they going to remember your message or your anger?
Okay, we're taking another break. We're talking to Annie Hudson and Professor Gary Francione on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at goveganradio.com. Greetings once again. Welcome to the second hour of Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. We are live Sundays, 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. Pacific Time. You can click Listen Live at GoVeganRadio.com or wait for the archive there. We're syndicated by the Genesis Communications Network. And if you are looking for a vegan movement, please join us at the World Vegan Summit and Expo. It's next July, July 29th, 30th, and 31st of 2016 at the University of California, Berkeley. And tickets are, the early bird discount tickets are extended now until, you know, through August 10th. So adult tickets are still $77, and discounts for college students, $67. As of August 11th, the adult price will go up to $99, and the college students will be paying $77 at that time. But we've extended the early bird discount period, so take advantage of that. Go to worldvegansummit.com. Yeah, that's for the vegan movement. This weekend, the animal welfare industry is having its convention, ARCon. Don't look for a vegan movement there. I don't know that you can really look for a vegan movement with direct action everywhere, although we don't question the sincerity, the concern, the compassion, the care for animals of the people who are getting involved. Direct action everywhere is attracting a lot of people. It's just you know, where is that action going? Is it the best action? And we're talking today to Annie Hudson, who is with Evolve for Animals, formerly an organizer with Direct Action Everywhere and Collectively Free in New York City. Professor Gary Francione is also on the line. It's kind of an interesting story, Annie, evolving from 4-H Club and 4-H Club in childhood to becoming a vegan and then getting active. And when last we left you, you were involved with Direct Action Everywhere Actions, and then you were thinking, maybe this is welfare as opposed to abolition. What made you think it was welfare, by the way?
Well, you know, when you speak these vague catchphrases, such as it's not food, it's violence, and you don't offer them a solution, like to go vegan, you've created this completely confusing message that leaves the audience curious and with only half of the story. So
why not buy humane meat then, right? If it's violent, let's get the lesser violent food,
sure.
Right? So you can conclude that. Yeah. Okay.
And since, you know, our mental schema, the most majority of our schema is that we don't know that we can not use animals. We have no, that we don't draw that conclusion to veganism. We have to educate people there. And, you know, when you utter these words, as I had done so many times before, Whole Foods wants you to think that the animals whose bodies they sell were treated with kindness and with dignity, but they are lying to you. You have just made the supplier the enemy. You have just made it about treatment and not use, because it sounds like maybe you're suggesting that there is a way to treat these animals with kindness and dignity if only there were some reform, right? And the message is not all-encompassing. It certainly doesn't lead us to the path of animal liberation. And I believe that if you manage to inspire any thought at all, and I saw this time and time again, it'll be along the lines of, where can I sign a petition? Wow, they really need to regulate this better. Or even, hey, where can I donate to the cause? Whole Foods is not the enemy. Chipotle is not the enemy. The only enemy is the one inside of us that allows us to participate in a system that goes against our basic morality. So that was my...
Okay. Professor Francione.
Yeah, I was just going to say, you know, I really do think, you know, Anna Charlton and I are writing another book, and we're talking, one of the things we're talking about is the fact that there really is no vegan movement. We're trying to build one, but there really is one. There is not one presently, and there really hasn't been for all intents and purposes. But what I wanted to mention is, when you talk about animal liberation, I think it's important to focus on the fact that that is a concept that comes from Peter Singer, and Wayne Shun is very explicit about endorsing Singer's view of animal liberation. Singer's view of animal liberation is not abolitionist by no stretch of the imagination, because Singer is a utilitarian. And Peter has always been clear about the fact that, you know, first of all, he's not even a vegan. I mean, he calls himself a flexible vegan and whatnot. But a utilitarian, in many ways, can't be an abolitionist, because abolition is a rights concept, and utilitarians reject rights concepts. So I think when you say, well, they're really abolitionists, they really all want liberation, I think that's true, but I don't think it's what I think. What they're actually looking at, in my judgment, or what they're seeking to foster, is a more progressive view of animal welfare, which is reflected in the position of Farm Sanctuary and Mercy for Animals and Compassion Over Killing and all these other groups. I mean, those people are all new welfarists. They would all say, "Oh yes, of course I'm an abolitionist," just as in the 1990s they said, you know, "Oh, I'm really in favor of animal rights." But they all promote animal welfare reform as a means to the end of abolition or animal rights. And that can't work, because what you end up doing is you're using a means which is inconsistent with the end. And and I think that, you know, all these groups do this. And Shun actually says that he's in favor of incremental change as long as it's got strategic mooring. Well, that's exactly what all these other groups say. So I think in many ways, what Wayne is doing, whether or not other people in DXC realize it, I think what Wayne is doing is he's he's focused on a group of people, a group of primarily young people who are attracted to this sort of this methodology of going into places and chanting or yelling or whatever, or open rescues or whatever. And what he's trying to do is generate controversy and which will, you know, get people thinking about the animal issue, but he's not telling them about veganism, and he's not telling them about abolition. As a matter of fact, he says veganism is harmful. What is he doing? He is, to the extent that anybody hears it's not food, it's violence, and gets interested, they're going to go and they're going to look at the dominant actors on the scene, all of whom are promoting some version or other of welfareism. So they're going to glom on to Mercy for Animals, or they're going to glom on to Farm Sanctuary, or PETA, or any one of the other new welfareist groups. So I think in many ways, you know, and Wayne acknowledged this in an essay that he wrote. He said that he wants DXC to make the work of people like Bruce Friedrich more effective. So I think that's the really the game plan here.
And yet he says he's for incremental change. And then last week when I asked him, so you say you're for incremental welfare change, he said no, not welfare. Just so he's for incremental change, but not incremental welfare change. And I don't really know quite what that means.
What the difference is.
Ninety percent of last week's conversation was incoherent and incomprehensible.
I also wonder what Annie's. You listened to? Did you heard last week's show, Annie? Or
I did. Yes.
Yeah. Did you have a reaction to what you heard from our discussion among the three of us?
I did, and so touching on what Gary just said, and this is my problem, and this is why I'm talking today, because I feel like the bigger picture, that this message is actually creating more of a problem than it's doing good, right? I don't feel like it's doing good for the animals. I believe it's creating harm, just like I didn't go vegan because of HSUS. So coming from the inside and the people, you know, my local community here, every single one of them wants, complete liberation, is an abolitionist, all vegan. That's what we all wanted. That's what they all want. But the messages are completely confusing. And that's the problem because, you know, Wayne is such a powerful voice. And I see all these really young and inexperienced vegans and activists, myself was included, just holding on to every word. And Collectively Free really, really aligns itself with DXC, Direct Action Everywhere. And these are amazing people that want amazing things, but the message is not coming across that way, and I just feel that that's really detrimental to our movement.
But that doesn't sound like that sounds to me like a cult. If you've got a bunch of people who are sort of following this guy and don't even know what he says, because most of them don't. I mean, I've been conversing with various DXC people this past week, and it's very clear they don't know what he says. So they get upset when I say, well, he's in favor of incremental reform. And they say, how dare you say this? And they get upset and they call me names. And then I point
right
to something he said where he's written it. I mean, Rafaela from Collectively Free was upset with me this week because, well, she's often upset. But she was saying that, it's time to get rid of all the old way that we've been doing things. We've got to have the new way. And I don't know what she's talking about because we've never had a vegan movement. That's the problem. We've never
so
really.
Here's what I want to say. If we could all imagine that all the fuel that we put and we devote into incomplete and inconsistent messages, like tri-veg, cage-free, or until every animal is free, instead went into clear and concise conversations about a vegan way of living as the moral imperative, not cupcakes, not buying tofu, but veganism is like the very least we can do. And our movement's history has taught us that people will not default to veganism, so it is our responsibility to educate them. And trying to educate someone a concept without using the word vegan, from a pedagogically standpoint, that's really inefficient. So,
well, they're such vague slogans, you can't really figure out what it means, what the slogans mean.
What are we supposed to do? And so my theory is that people who don't articulate veganism to other people, to non-vegans, are people who just cannot articulate what veganism is. It's not a diet, and it's, you know, we should take some pride that it's a stance against injustice. And you know, it's for abolishing all animal use. And the only reason why people, the non-vegans around us, are still confused about what veganism is because even vegans are confused about what veganism is. And, you know, when you're not speaking clearly, people will not understand you. We're not seeing change happen fast enough. So we begin to get frustrated. And when we become frustrated, we want to vent. So since this is a really common issue with young vegans and activists, I think there is no coincidence that the majority of the people in the organization are young and inexperienced. So to me, it's a little bit like catharsis. And Gary, I think it's really interesting that you brought up this like cult mentality because...
Hang on. We'll continue our discussion with Annie Hudson and Professor Gary Francione on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at goveganradio.com. Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at goveganradio.com, on Twitter at goveganradio, Facebook Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. Today we're talking to Annie Hudson with Evolve for Animals in the New York City area and Professor Gary Francione. Again, we're talking about Direct Action Everywhere. Annie was an organizer for Direct Action Everywhere and for Collectively Free in New York City. And, you know, I'm upset with Direct Action Everywhere for its meaningless, vague slogans that I suggested. I thought I probably would have never complained about Direct Action Everywhere if the slogans were, for example, you know, that they have their slogan, "Until all animals are free." Well, if that's meaningless, but they could say, you know, something like, "So that all animals may be free," you know, "Go vegan," you know, or "It's not food, it's violence," you know, maybe say, "Choose peace and nonviolence, go vegan." "Animals are not ours." Maybe if they would say, "Animals are not property to be eaten, worn, or used for any purpose, go vegan." "Swap speciesism," maybe say, "Oppression of others, including other species, is wrong. Every life matters. Go vegan." So, Annie, before
they don't miss an opportunity. You know, this week we had somebody show up on my Facebook page, the Abolitionist Approach Facebook page, who said that somebody from DXC, I think her name is Sarita Rodriguez, who is their blog manager, from what I could see online, and she said that saying that everyone should go vegan was classist and racist. So, I mean, they don't miss an opportunity. Now, I mean, I've written about that. I understand all the relationships between veganism and class and race. And to make a statement that the problem, the classist problem or the racist problem, is the idea that veganism is a moral imperative is nonsense. It's incredible nonsense. But they don't miss.
I don't understand. I can't understand that reasoning at all.
we don't have enough time until the next break, but. But the one thing I did want to say about Annie's comments before, it warms my heart. You know, Anna and I have been going through boxes of stuff from when we had the clinic at Rutgers in the 1990s and, you know, in those days. And been going through papers, and we've found so many really nasty letters we got when I first started talking about the use-treatment distinction, when I first started talking about veganism as a moral imperative, and that sort of stuff. And people were writing angry letters, you know, that we had to focus on treatment. Treatment was really important. And when
we
I said,
need
look,
baby
I don't really
steps,
you know, and I didn't care how humanely animals were treated. It didn't matter to me. We had no right to use them, to treat them exclusively as resources for humans. And it was just very, very interesting to sort of see that. And so now it makes me very happy that there's a new generation that's picking up that language and is turned on by it, because that, you know, that's good. I'm happy about that. As a matter of fact, very happy.
Yeah. Oh,
absolutely.
Annie, you were mentioning that. Mm-hmm. I don't know if we'll how long we'll have, but we'll continue. But so you were mentioning something about Gary saying something about it being cult-like, and I think you were picking up on that point.
Yeah. I mean, what else can I say? I mean, if we don't question, I mean, I think Gary, you even said it in one of your books. If we don't question in, you know, what it is that we're doing, if we can't critically examine our own messages, And if someone calls it out or says, hey, this might be a problem, and everyone gets up in arms and everyone's angry, that is cult mentality. It isn't everything for the animals. We have to really think about what kind of messages we're sending to the public.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's interesting that you brought up the race and class thing, because one of the things we try to do at Evolve for Animals is to empower people to be the vegan in the room, so to speak. And I hear a lot of people from Direct Action Everywhere saying that they will not contribute, you know, they won't be present when there's, you know, animal products being eaten, that they won't dine at non-vegan restaurants and so on and so forth. And first of all, I'm thinking, no one's going to miss you. Your non-vegan friends are only going to say, oh, poor Annie, she couldn't make it to dinner because she can't eat with us because she's vegan. And then the other part of that is, how privileged is that? I come from a town that is very small. There is no vegan restaurant there. I don't even know if there's vegans there. And if so, somebody from my hometown decides to go vegan, they have to give up, you know, eating with their friends. They have to give up being. No, that's a really great opportunity to stand up and take a stance, you know, against injustice. And people are going to come to you. They're going to ask you questions. And when that happens to me, I don't care how many times I get the, oh, but plants though, or what do you do for protein? I will act like it's the first time I've ever gotten that question. And thank you so much for asking me. Here, let me educate you on this. And
we'll continue. Like it's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at GoVeganRadio.com. Register now for the World Vegan Summit and Expo. Go to WorldVeganSummit.com. Continue on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at GoVeganRadio.com. On Twitter at Go Vegan Radio, Facebook Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. Bob Linden pages there. Thanks for support from Vegetarian House, 100% vegan restaurant in San Jose, 520 East Santa Clara Street. This is one of the best vegan restaurants in the world. Check out the menu at vegetarianhouse.us. This extensive, wonderful cuisine. And Vegetarian House caters, so if you're in the Bay Area, you have an event coming up, a social event, you're getting married, a business event, have it catered by Vegetarian House. I believe Vegetarian House, we're talking now about them having some of their wonderful food at the World Vegan Summit and Expo next July, 29th, 30th, 31st at UC Berkeley, and we've extended the period for early bird ticket registration, discounted tickets. Stay at $77 for adults, $67 for college students until August 11th. So we're talking to Annie Hudson, Evolve for Animals, and Professor Gary Francione. I think I'm still in a little bit of a state of shock. We're talking about Direct Action Everywhere and the mention that veganism is racist and classist. It just struck me during the break how, you know, when you have communities of color in a health crisis right now with our obligation to help people go vegan, I'm not sure I understand any of this. As I said,
there are some people, Bob, who believe that what those of us who promote veganism as a moral imperative are doing, saying that everyone has to go to Whole Foods and buy expensive processed vegan food. Now, I don't eat processed food from Whole Foods or any place else, but there are issues, but they're not the issues that DXC is focused on. For example, I teach at a university in Newark, which is a very poor place, and you know, it's a food desert. And one of the things that, you know, that folks are working on there is to try to improve the ability of people in Newark to get fresh fruits and vegetables without paying a huge amount of money, so that they have less of an incentive to go to these to fast food places, which are killing them. So,
yeah, we need community gardens. We need, you know, food, rice and beans food trucks, and you know.
But, I mean, look, it is completely mindless to say that a call for veganism is racist and classist. But thought it was interesting because my comment when she posted that was to say, these folks don't miss a beat, you know? I mean, they just, they're there on the front lines of, you know, trashing veganism whenever every opportunity they can. It is bizarre. I acknowledge it's bizarre, and I think that the things that Sean writes confused, incoherent, and contradictory. But the bottom line is that it's just, as I said last week, you know, it's another new welfarist group. What's disturbing about it is that, unlike other new welfarist groups that pay lip service to veganism as a way of reducing suffering, none of them promotes it as a moral imperative. But, you know, they at least pay lip service to it. He, to the extent he talks about it, or DXE, is hostile to it, which mm-hmm. is a sort of a twist, you know, and in certain ways a disturbing one, and in certain ways not, because the reality is the people who are attracted to that phenomenon probably are not good candidates for learning some, you know, critical thinking about animal ethics. And my guess is that most of them, the ones who are critical thinkers, are going to be like Annie. They're going to get away, and you know that's what we've been hearing tonight.
Well, I posted his 14-page essay all over Facebook, "Boycott Veganism" by Wayne Shun, and people are somewhat blown away by it, you know. And like Annie said, imagine if all of this energy were put into helping people go vegan, right? And figuring out how we deal with the food deserts and, you know, I mean, like...
It's not even... But the thing of this is it's so incoherent. He says, on one hand, he said, look, we don't need to turn people vegan. What we need to do is to get people who are vegan active. Okay, fine. So what do you want them to do? What do you want them to say? I mean, when they go in, you know, as I asked, I started off last week by asking Wayne, somebody comes up to you and says, you know, okay, fine, you know, it's food, it's not food, it's violence. What do I do? If I'm, you know, interested, if I'm intrigued by this idea, what do I do? And the answer is, well, you know, you become an activist with us. And veganism, it's crazy. Mm-hmm.
It's really scary because these are people who are so thirsty and they're so passionate to want to do something for animals. And I believe he even said it, that they're, you know, we can't have all these Donald Watsons running around, so, like, we have to empower them. But the way that they want to empower activists is, you know, I think it's completely the wrong way. They can't even talk about veganism. But, you know, I feel like we can have both. So instead of empowering activists to run into a store and yell at people, we can empower them by making sure that they can speak and articulate correctly and unapologetically about veganism. And when they start, you know, engaging people in a clear manner that changes hearts and minds, that is empowering. And I don't know what Wayne is saying, but, you know, education is activism. And when you articulate effectively the vegan message, that is really empowering. That's what we should be focusing on.
And going vegan is direct action. He seems to dispute that, but I think going vegan is one of the most meaningful actions one can take, really.
I believe it is the single most important activist action that one can take. Obviously, it's great if people want to go out and engage in creative, nonviolent vegan advocacy. I'm all for it. I try to help them. I try to provide materials that help them. But the bottom line is your decision to go vegan is applying the principle of abolition to your own life. It's a defiance of the prevailing norm that it's all right for us to commodify and exploit the vulnerable. It's a rejection of that. And as far as I'm concerned, that is the most important thing you can do if you want, you know, if you care about animals, the most important thing you can do is get out of the system of commodification, get out of the system of treating animals as property. You know, just
yeah, it's a rejection of violence. It's not food, it's violence. Well, how do we reject violence? We go vegan. That was my motivation initially when I was saying, like, I can't eat this anymore. I can't, you know, I mean, I can't participate in the violence. That was my initial reason for being on this vegan path.
And we see that when you come to it for, you know, like Gary said last week, when you come to veganism for ethical reasons, you will help people go vegan. And when the more and more people who are coming to it in a clear way, they're going to have a clear message. And then it's just a ripple effect. But, you know, as I said earlier, I came to veganism in a really roundabout, confused way. And it took me a while to really understand what veganism was. And unfortunately, I became an activist before I became educated on the matter. But
that's what DXE wants, isn't it? I mean, we want activists before vegans, right? So
yeah, that's... And, you know, I heard Wayne say, you know, I heard him give this speech, you know, maybe a year ago or so, and then I just listened to it again last week, and he talks about when he was in Chicago and they were giving out all this literature and no one was going vegan, but he said it over and over again that they were giving out vegetarian literature. I don't know whose literature they were using, if it was a specific organization, but all of the literature I've seen doesn't send out a clear message. So I can only imagine that whatever.
But how do they even know? How do they know? They haven't followed people home or know what the result of giving literature is. The people aren't necessarily going to say, "Oh, thanks, I'll read this right now. Okay, I'll go vegan." You know, I mean, it's right. How do you know that what the results?
And they're definitely not going to go vegan when you hand them literature that says vegetarian or tri-veg, cage-free, humane. So, of course, people aren't going vegan with mixed messages.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you a question. I know very little about Evolve. Does it promote animal welfare reform?
Absolutely not. Evolve for Animals.
So Evolve for Animals in the New York City, New Jersey area.
Yeah, it's an articulation of vegan is a way of living. It's all-encompassing, so we don't focus on... We are completely abolitionist, education-based. We do like film screenings and leafleting events, different tabling events, and it is we do not focus on food. We don't focus on the treatment or the use. It is completely about the use of animals. Wherever there is use, the abuse will follow. So the least that we can do is go vegan, and then we encourage people, you know, and we provide one-to-one mentorship, right? You know, just go vegan, and then. Okay, peace out. Good luck to you. No, we try to connect to people. We, you know, give them a sense of community. We want to help them be successful in their transformation to veganism. So we follow up with people and we make sure, and then we bring them into an abolitionist message. And, you know, just very recently we had a woman who became vegan because she spoke with one of our people, and she's showing up at our tables, and she's very clear. She knows exactly what she's talking about. So that's the way we have to do it.
Mm. And so you all don't get into, like, anti-fur campaigns or foie gras things or stuff like that?
Absolutely not. No, it is about all animal use. It's all encompassing. There's no one single issue that's worse than the other.
Yeah, right. That's exactly right. Well, this is really very interesting, and I'm really glad to see that, as I said, that there are young people arriving on the scene, because some of us are getting old, and I'm really happy to see that, you know, because look, these ideas have been kicking around since the 1990s when I started working on this stuff with Tom Reagan, and what grew out of that was basically the abolitionist idea, and we got a great deal of pushback. I mean, the hostility that was expressed when I wrote Rain Without Thunder in 1996, I got hate mail that would make Richard Dawkins alarmed. I mean, it was really, really horrible stuff. People were very upset with that book, which I basically argued the same thing I'm arguing now, but, you know, in a different historical context, that the movement has collapsed. It's a welfarist movement. It's a single issue campaign movement. It's an it's not a movement which understands abolition, and that it's promoting a welfarist and single issue campaign means to get to a supposedly more idealistic end, which is like George Bush proposing war as a way of having world peace. So you know, it just doesn't work. So I'm happy. I mean, I'm happy that y'all are getting out there and doing that sort of stuff. And I think it's important. You know, I mean, it makes my heart sing with joy to hear somebody other than me say veganism is the least that we can do. It's once you realize that animals have moral value, then you either stop exploiting them or you are an animal exploiter. It's a binary position. You're either a vegan or you're an animal exploiter.
Okay, we have one more break, and we'll continue with Annie Hudson and Professor Gary Francione on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. We've extended the early bird discount, so you can still sign up for the lowest prices available on the World Vegan Summit and Expo. Go to worldvegansummit.com. It is Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at GoVeganRadio.com. On Twitter at Go Vegan Radio, Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden on Facebook. And thanks for support from Selectee and Nature's Flavors, who helped us get the first World Vegan Summit and Expo going. You can see a lot of the talks there, including those from Professor Gary Francione at youtube.com/goveganradio. And order your tea online from Selectee, SELECTEA.com. All sorts of varieties there. And thousands of vegan products from Nature's Flavors, including Birdie and Bill's organic sodas and vegan baking mixes and essential oils. Again, that's naturesflavors.com. And we've extended the early bird ticket prices through August 10th. They'll go up August 11th, so take advantage now. Still $77 for adults, $67 for college students, whatever college you attend anywhere in the world. Go to worldvegansummit.com. Prices go up as of August 11th. We're talking to Professor Gary Francione and Annie Hudson, who is with Evolve for Animals in the New York City area, formerly an organizer with Direct Action Everywhere and Collectively Free. So anything that we haven't covered? Who wants to cover what? Anything we haven't mentioned today that needs mentioning?
I want to know whether an early bird special is a species expression.
What? What's that?
I'm joking, Bob. I'm joking.
What did you say? I didn't know what.
I didn't know whether an early bird special is a speciesist expression.
Yeah, right. I don't think so. Mm-hmm. Right? I wouldn't think it is. I mean,
early
unless
bird gets the worm. That's where that comes from, right?
Right. Well, we will have. It'll only be tofu worms in our case.
But if veganism, Bob. I'm sorry. If veganism is classist and racist, then I'm worried that you know, the early bird special, that might run afoul of the correct rule. One thing I do want to emphasize, and I think it's important, we need to build a vegan movement. That's what we try to do with the summit, and that's what, you know, what those of us who are working in the, you know, as grassroots people in the abolitionist movement are doing, is trying to build a vegan movement. We've never had one. We've never had one. Donald Watson articulated principles in 1944. They remained with a relatively small number of people. And when the animal movement developed in the 1970s and 80s, many of us were vegan. But by the time we got into the 90s, the whole idea of, well, you know, you can't insist on veganism. You know, we had this whole idea. You probably don't remember, Bob. I don't know. Do you remember Animals Agenda, Bob? Were you around?
Yes, there? I remember it. Yeah,
there was an essay in there in the old days when Tom Reagan and I were attacked for being, quote, elitist, end quote, for insisting on animal rights and veganism, and that debate is still going on. And what we now have is the Happy Exploitation Movement, you know, ushered in by Peter Singer and PETA and Mercy for Animals and Compassion Over Killing and all of these groups that are promoting, you know, a happy exploitation and promoting the idea that you can consume with compassion. And I think that that's really, really, really tragic. And it's got to stop. If we're ever going to see progress, it's got to stop. Mm-hmm. And so I would encourage people like Rafaela out there at Collectively Free to learn some history before you tell me that the vegan movement, the whole idea of a vegan movement, that's been tried and it's failed. No, Rafaela.
It's never been tried. It's brand new. This is as new as it gets, right?
That's what we're trying to do. That's what some of us are trying to do. It's what I've been trying to do for like a few decades now. And, you know, but we need to be doing this. We need to be focusing. I mean, yesterday, Bob, I was amazed. In certain ways, I mean, I know this is what he thinks, but I was amazed to see Paul Watson write a piece in which he slammed as purist and elitist those of us who maintain that veganism is a moral baseline. You know, and he said, well, you know, we can't do that. We simply can't do that because that's too confrontational and it upsets people. This is a guy who is willing to ram ships to save a whale, and he's telling me that it is inappropriate to tell people that if you care about the fact that Cecil the Lion was shot and you're not vegan, you're not thinking clearly. I'm sorry, if chickens matter as much as dolphins, which I believe they do, then we've got an obligation to put it that way.
Well, every think of every chicken as Cecil or Cecilia. Everyone has a name, right? So, I mean, they all could have names, and yeah, I don't know. So, okay, I guess we're out of time. So, thanks for being with us, Annie and Professor Francione, and we will return. We'll return next week. Thanks for listening. It's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. Go register now, worldvegansummit.com.